going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Even the type of swings that Caro takes. I mean, that was a veteran-type swing with two strikes, just doing what he could with that pitch.
Well, he realizes he's going to hit a few home runs, not too many. So he's got to make contact in those situations with two strikes, and he shortens his stroke. I mean, it's visibly... You can tell that he's got a two-strike approach. There are some guys that never get that. And Edgar, at 22 years old, is getting it. So watch it from the side. He knows he's got to protect because I think having a catcher's eye, he knows that's going to be a strike. He just reaches out, dumps it into left center field. That's his second hit of the night.
Hit and run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
That's Steve Stone on the CHSN broadcast with John Schriffin earlier in the week talking about Edgar Caro's two-strike approach. It is hit and run on The Score. Some Pete Crow Armstrong stuff a little bit later in the hour. We're here for one more hour, but a chance to talk to Steve Stone right now. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Stoney, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good, Speaks. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm enjoying watching Edgar Caro. I'm enjoying seeing him as an athlete and an overall ball player. What are your impressions of him on the overall before we dig in a little deeper? What do you think so far?
I think right now he's a bit ahead offensively than defensively, but the defense is pretty decent. I mean, he blocks pitches well. I think what's going to happen is he's going to learn. The learning curve is going to be dealing with pitchers on a pitch-by-pitch basis and trying to get the most out of each and every one, another out here, another inning here. Go out there and give them something that will give them enough confidence to maybe make a big pitch in a situation where it's necessary. Excuse me. But for 22 years old, he looks really good to me. I mean, this could turn out to be quite a deal that brought him over. I think that he's got a chance to be something special. So in talking with a lot of people around the ball club, they say that he's a quiet kid, so you don't really understand just how smart he is, certainly baseball-wise. Baseball acumen is pretty good. And I like what I've seen so far.
That's pretty cool to hear about those conversations. Yeah, the baseball acumen does seem good. Like the instincts, because even just to have the two-strike approach like you were talking about there, and we've seen him on, you know, as a base runner too, seems like a ball player. Like he thinks and acts like a ball player in a full way.
Well, I think you're certainly right about that. And the thing that's amazing to me is he's so young. He's been just about the youngest player in every league he's been in. And so he comes up to the major leagues as a very young 22. He just turned 22, so there's a lot of time for growth yet. I think eventually he's going to be a very strong offensive force. I'm not going to tell you he's going to be a middle-of-the-order guy because I'm not sure about that power, but he's going to get stronger. And he's certainly about as smart as he needs to be at this point. All he needs is the reps, as they say in football. He needs the reps. He needs the at-bats. He needs to catch innings. He has to become conversant with each and every one of the pitchers that he's going to handle, because there's a different switch with each one of these guys. You know, for Davis Martin, there might be something that you can say at a given time. Jonathan Cannon, you go out there, you might have to say something different. And getting to know these guys and know what that switch is part of the art of being a catcher. And the fact that he is so young, he's got a lot of time for growth.
Man, there's just nothing like being a catcher, is there? Like, you got to – I keep thinking – Joe Girardi once said to me that, like, you got to be more concerned about your pitcher than your next at bat. You know, it's like, what other position in sports do you have to be that? So you have to be that selfless. It's a big ask for a young player.
Well, there's also another factor, is you have to be almost a masochist, because you're going to take a beating. I mean, you know, when as soon as you don the gear and go behind the plate, you know you're going to take foul tips off your shoulder. You're going to get them off your thighs. You're going to get them in the nether regions. You're going to get them off your mask. Mm. I mean, you're going to get hit. You're going to get beat up. And that's the most amazing part. That's why we have to have a different standard offensively for catchers than we do for, say, the shortstop or the second baseman. You're asking these guys to do a whole lot. You're asking them to know each and every one of his own pitchers. You're asking them to know the pitchers from the other team and the guys he's going to be facing. You're asking him to know just a great deal, to help game plan with a pitcher and a pitching coach and what they're going to do. And it's all encompassing. I mean, if you're going to catch, especially in the major leagues, you're going to have a skill set that's off the charts. It's the toughest position to play, and it's really one of those where there are some times when, especially if you catch a good foul ball off your shoulders, your swing is going to be affected. You have to know how to adjust to that. There's so many little things that you have to do that other guys don't have to deal with, that it becomes one of those positions that you really value. If you got a Salvi Perez, like Kansas City's been very lucky all these years, they have a guy that was a leader from the time he was 16 years old. It really helps if your catcher is a leader on the ball club, because that's a guy that he's the only player on the field that has the whole game in front of him. He can see where everybody is aligned. He can see exactly what's going to happen. And he's got to go out there sometimes. He has to give a set of signs. You got runners at first and third. You come out. What am I going to do with this? Am I going to throw through? Am I going to fake throw to third base? I mean, am I going to hold the ball? You have to know a lot of different things, and you know that's why when you get one, you really value him.
The tools of ignorance, you know, just the willingness to do it. They're like drummers in bands, Steve. It's like when I see a drummer,
The drummer doesn't get hit quite as much.
No, he doesn't. You're right. But when I see a drummer loading out at the end of the night, I'm like, why would you ever choose to be a drummer? What the hell? Everybody else is like, all right, see you later. And the drummer's still doing his thing. You mentioned Jonathan Cannon. He was excellent yesterday. Threw the changeup 32 times. I wondered, like, are they all different? The changeup he throws, the changeup Shane Smith throws, the kick change supposedly Davis Martin is throwing. I wondered if they, as teammates, could be talking amongst themselves and making each other's changeups better, or if they're just too different to do so. I don't know. What do you think?
No, you can look. Every changeup is going to be a little different. Some let's call it a right hand pitcher to a left hand hitter. There's going to be some changes that just drift away from the left-hand hitter. There's going to be some changes that not only drift away but go straight down. There's also changes that only go down. They don't drift away. And it depends on the size of a pitcher's hands. It depends on the feel that they get. It depends on how far along they are in understanding their craft. There's a lot of different ways to throw a change. Some guys just split their finger, and eventually that might morph into a splitter. That's what happened with me, and I had to abandon it because I threw so many curveballs that, along with the splitter, I was hurting my elbow. But I could never master a straight change. And these guys today, just about each and every one of these guys has one, because velocity is good, but these major league hitters hit velocity. And so the change of speed is something that will get a guy off balance, and that's what a pitcher's job is, to keep the hitter off balance. My job as a pitcher was to make sure that that hitter hit the ball between his hands and the label or the name and the end of the bat. If he hits it between the label and the name, that's the sweet spot. My job is to get him to do something that he doesn't hit it off the sweet spot. And to do that, you have to change speeds. A guy who can't change speeds is not going to be around very long.
Man, I wonder if that's still the goal, because everybody's so obsessed with swing and miss. Your goal of getting him to hit it between the hands and the label, that's how you get soft contact, right? That's how you last in games and use your fielders and all of that. Our obsession with swing and miss might mean that's not the stated goal for some these days.
Well, look, swing and miss is fine, and there's certain situations where you really need no contact. I mean, you got a man at third and one out, and this is a one- or two-run game, and you want to have no contact, because usually any kind of contact without the infield being drawn in is going to score a run. You can't give up a fly ball, that scores a run. You can't give up a little chopper in the infield, that scores a run. So the best way to eliminate that is to make sure you have a swing and miss pitch. But you can't go to strike everybody out, because if you do that, Speaks, you wind up with 100 pitches in the fifth inning, which means you're in your bullpen, you've only gotten 13, 14 outs. You need to get, ideally, you need to get 18 outs. You need to get through six innings, 18 outs, leave your bullpen with three innings or nine outs to go, and you've done your job. Now, I don't believe necessarily in the five and fly, and I like the fact that more pitchers are going deeper into games now than we've seen in recent years, because a lot of people are starting to realize, people who run these teams, that the less you strain your bullpen in April, May, and June, the better off you're going to be in July, August, and September. Because a wonderful manager and a recent Hall of Famer, Jim Leland, once said to me, he said, just remember something. The best bullpen doesn't always win. The healthiest bullpen wins. When you come to nut-cutting time, you better have a healthy bullpen. If not, you're going to finish up the track. And to do that, your starters have to protect your pensmen.
Yeah, you know who runs away when it's nut-cutting time is the Bulls. Like, they run far, far away, man. And I'd be right there with them. Steve Stone with us here on Hit and Run. Stoney, did you have... I love this idea of like learning from teammates and like, you know, guys messing with grips while they're sitting there on the bench together during games. You must have had good experience. I wonder if you could share either somebody you learned from or somebody you were able to teach as a teammate and just kind of further careers that way.
Well, I think ideally your older players, your more experienced players will help the younger players. Because it's really difficult to play in the major leagues. I mean, it's very difficult to get there. It's even more difficult to stay there. And there are certain things that you have to do. And I didn't think that anybody would eventually come to the type of workout situation that I came to. But, you know, I would, if somebody said, how did you do this? I would explain to them. But I was a different type of pitcher than most, because by the time I became fairly good at this, my arm had been hurt a couple of times and I had lost the velocity. So what I had to do was try to trick these guys. And I think that's what a lot of guys have lost in the new driveline philosophy. The driveline philosophy, which I have been very much against for quite some time, is throw every pitch as hard as you can. That's not called pitching. That's called throwing. So although it helps them for a short period of time. And when they're looking ahead at their second Tommy John, they can say, you know, maybe there was a better way to do it. And there were some guys that used, and again, I don't think we're going to go backwards, but there are certain things you can take forwards from what happened. And one was the Mets philosophy of drop and drive, which was try to get your plant leg, in case of a right-hand pitcher, the right leg, try to get it as low as possible and then spring at the hitter. These guys in that era were throwing 300 innings a year, Speaks. They were going out there and they were taking the ball. They were averaging over seven innings per start. And amazingly enough, I mean, Tom Seaver didn't exactly have a two-year career. Jerry Kuzman didn't exactly have a three-year career. Nolan Ryan, as we know, had a career that seemingly never ended. They were all drop-and-drive guys. And if you think about it, the muscles in your lower body are so much bigger and so much stronger than your upper body, you might as well use as much lower body as you possibly can, because that's going to save arms. The driveline philosophy of throw every pitch as hard as you can is not going to save arms. It's going to guarantee you run through a pitching staff, and eventually it's next guy up kind of thing. I mean, well, the Sox had 6 Tommy John surgeries this year.
Yeah.
That's something that in years past, now, you know, it's not to say, well, there wasn't Tommy John in that era, but we've had eras where we had healthier arms, where guys could pitch longer, take more starts, go deeper into games. And a lot of them were pitchers. They might have 98 in their back pocket, but they're going to start out 92, 93. Verlander was a great example of that. I mean, he's the closest to a modern-day pitcher who used the idea of, I'm not going to show you everything I have the first time up. I'm going to save that to when I really need to get you. And when I really need to get you, all of a sudden you think you know exactly where your hands have to be to get out front and hit the ball. Well, guess what? This ball is going to be by you before you realize what's happened. And that's how he did it. There were a lot of great pitchers that did it the same way. Bob Gibson was another guy. He would throw 92, 93 the first time up, and 98 and 99 when the game was on the line late. I mean, that's how these guys were able to pitch as long as they could. And it wasn't just that these guys did anything different as far as workout is concerned. It's just that they understood that the avocation is called pitching. So let's pitch and not just throw.
Steve Stone with us here on Hit and Run. Steve, the baseball world's saddened by the loss of Walt Jocketty, who a lot of our listeners will remember as the GM of the St. Louis Cardinals. But this is a guy who was Sandy Alderson's right-hand man for the A's for, 15 years? Helped build that Tony La Russa A's team from the late 80s and early 90s. And also was an executive of the year with the Cincinnati Reds in 2010. This is a long and illustrious career, and I imagine you knew Walt.
I knew Walt very well. In fact, we used to have lunches every Saturday. We go to a deli in Scottsdale, and it was Jerry Reinsdorf. It was Walt Jocketty, Tony La Russa when he was in town, lots of baseball folk, Rene Latchman. A lot of guys would come there, and Walt was a wonderful man. In fact, I remember I had a couple of nightclubs in Scottsdale sitting on the patio with Walt, and we were talking, and he said, you know, I got a chance for 2 jobs. And I said, well, what jobs are they? He said, I've interviewed for both the Texas Rangers and the St. Louis Cardinals. And I said, and you're pondering this? And he goes, well, yeah. I said, that's a no-brainer, Walt. You got to go to St. Louis. I said, that's a historic franchise. I mean, that's something that in a city of 315,000 people, they draw over 3 million people a year. They love their Cardinals. It's one of those things that, for me, you get an opportunity to do that, that's the one that you take. And, of course, he did go there and had a lot of success. He was, number one, a great baseball man. Number two, just a terrific guy. And he went in and he had a lung transplant, and it worked out really well. And eventually, he went home. They did send him home, and he picked up a virus. He picked up an infection, and he went into the hospital. He was in the hospital for over a year. He never got over that infection, and the baseball world is saddened. Walt was a great man, a wonderful baseball guy, and had tremendous success, impacted a lot of lives. And, you talk to Tony La Russa or anybody else who worked really closely with Walt, and they'll tell you what a special man he was.
Man, that's I'm glad I asked. Yeah, I think they won 7 divisions while he was in St. Louis, executive of the year 3 times, made a lot of really smart moves.
Perfect. He did, and he understood a couple of different things, and this is what will make a really good executive. It's not just talent. You can't just load your team with talent, but you have to load your team with people that fit. In other words, you don't have to have an all-star at every position. You have to have a couple of selfless guys who don't mind playing a team concept of baseball, don't mind taking the ball the other way to move a runner from second to third with less than 2 outs. I mean, Walt understood exactly how you build a baseball team, And then he was smart enough to turn it over to a manager who was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hiring Tony in St. Louis after the success in Oakland, a big part of it. But he also traded for Chris Carpenter. That's a legendary trade, you know. Yeah. Jim Edmonds, Jason Isringhausen traded for Wainwright. Wainwright was a Braves prospect. That's a pretty legendary trade right there, you know.
So I saw Adam Wainwright as he was coming back from his first arm problem. And I watched him going through the Arizona Fall League with that big overhand curveball. And I thought, you know, they're not going to hit that curveball real well. And then, of course, he went on to have a lot of years after Atlanta. And, he's one of those guys that people like being a teammate of his. He was he's a terrific pitcher.
Yeah. Steve Stone, thanks so much, man. You back on the broadcast when they get to Milwaukee later this week? When do we see you?
Well, Milwaukee is coming here.
Oh, that's right, of course. That would help.
It's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Houston comes to town. And, yes, I will resume my career when the team comes.
All right, good. Well, good fun homestand with the Brewers and the Astros this week. We'll be watching, and I got to get over there and say hello. Stoney, keep rolling.
By the way, Speaks, just one more thing. I think the boys are starting to come together a little bit. I think they're starting to play better baseball, and it should be a whole lot better than it's been to this point.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. I got another minute. What are you seeing?
What I'm seeing is guys like Brooks Baldwin who are starting to hit the ball. I mean, hitting a home run late off Miller is a pretty good task, and he was able to do that. Looking at some of the pitchers starting to understand things, Edgar Caro being here, all of a sudden, Miguel Vargas is starting to show what he showed apparently when the Dodgers signed him. You know, he's starting to hit the ball well. Maybe it was just a change of hand position, whatever it is. But I'm seeing some better baseball out of these guys. And the one thing that has to happen, and hopefully it will, is Luis Robert has to stop swinging at sliders out of the zone. And if he just swung at strikes, this could still be a destructive guy. So hit a home run. Maybe that will turn the light on, and I think that overall, I think the guys are just playing a little better baseball.
That's what it has looked like. Agreed. Thanks, Stoney. Appreciate it.
Okay, Speaks.
You got it. It's Steve Stone. Yeah, Miguel Vargas has three of his last four games are multi-hit efforts. He's 8-for-23 in his last six. Did change the hand position. Luis Robert is still a chase machine, but did homer yesterday. Good and interesting homestand. Worthy, if the weather's out, it'd be a good time to get down there on the south side. The Adam Wainwright trade, yeah, it's pretty good. J.D. Drew, former first rounder, and the backup catcher Eli Marrero for Jason Marquis and Ray King, who would help on the big league level, and a double-A pitcher in Wainwright, who went on to have an absolutely incredible St. Louis Cardinals career. It's a hell of a trade by Walt Jocketty, among many, many great moves. And tell you what was a good trade. 47 games of Javier Baez for the Mets in exchange for Pete Crow Armstrong. What is the ceiling on PCA? He talks, and also one of the best analysts on MLB Network talked about PCA. You'll hear that next on Hit and Run on the Score.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
And PCA lines one to right, and it's past the outstretched glove of Sanchez. PCA on the move, racing towards third. Are they going to send him? Here it comes. PCA to the plate, and wow! Inside the park home run, Pete Crow Armstrong. Oh, brother. Can he absolutely fly?
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
He can ride like the wind. That's what he can do. Somehow yacht rock and PCA just feels good. Maybe it's his California roots. It's the crazy hair. It's the fact that he is like the wind. I mean, there's very few people that are more fun to watch run the bases than that guy. Every once in a while, man. Like, you get a guy like this on your teams, you're like, oh, please just hit a gapper. Or please just hit one down the line. Or just get on first and then somebody else hit a gapper. I just want to watch that dude run. You know who always comes to mind for me for some reason was Jorge Soler. Just because when he was the young athlete, Jorge Soler, before he became a bit more of a lumberer. Not that he's had any real big leg injuries or anything, but so he probably still runs well. But, like, just an incredible athlete to watch run. Oh, my God. I remember watching that guy being like, that doesn't even look like the same species as me. Like, I am not. That's a completely different kind of human being. And PCA, like, PCA does not look like the same species as me. That is a different thing. He looks like he's more ferret. He's more like a ferret than he is like a human. You know what I mean? It's like you see a ferret run around, you're like, man, look how fast that ferret is. I bet he'd score from second on a little bloop single. Easily. Wouldn't even be a throw as that ferret comes in. But it's not just the speed with Pete. And that was the thing right away. When the trade was made for Javi Baez and people started saying, oh, this kid. Oh, let's talk about this kid. Oh, do you know his mother was it Angels in the Outfield? Is that the one?
Little Big League.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Confession time. I've never seen either of those.
I haven't either.
All right, Sean. Woo! Way to go. I'm like, all right, let's get to the younger demo. Sean, you can expose me for not having seen these baseball movies. Okay. How did you miss both of those? What the hell's wrong with you?
I know, right? I feel like that should have been like right up my alley.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. 8-year-old Sean Sears. I mean, How are your folks not showing you that?
I was too busy obsessed with Thomas the Tank Engine, man.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, right?
It's darn good stuff. But anyway, we heard about PCA. We're like, oh, there's pop in that bat. Oh, really? But he's so little. How is there pop in that bat? Well, if he's a power guy and a speed guy, and he can play center field like that, we've heard that all along. And now we're seeing it. I mean, for anybody who doesn't know, Pete Crow Armstrong is in the top five right now amongst wins above replacement on Fangraphs. Like, And I have some issues with war. I don't know what it's good for. Absolutely nothing. Say it again. I have some issues because I think it values defense a little too much at premium positions, and the numbers climb a little bit. But anyway, Pete's a wonderful defender, wonderful base runner, obviously, and now the pop is there of late. What is going on with Pete Crow Armstrong? It has made the rounds on social media. In fact, one of our bosses just 10 minutes ago sent me a text and said, have you seen this? And it was the Instagram post from MLB Network of a Mark DeRosa breakdown on Pete Crow Armstrong. And yeah, it's really good. DeRosa's great talking hitting. And he dissected some PCA highlights and talked about him a little bit. Here's a couple moments from that. DeRosa talking about what PCA can be when he's talking about him defensively and offensively.
You're going to see PCA move to the top of this order at some point during this year, the way he's swinging a bat. So I want to give him some love because I don't think people truly realize how good this kid can be and how he's affecting the game already for the Chicago Cubs. So let's get into it. It's all encompassing. We talk about it all the time. How do you add value? Energy, pop, run the bases, elite defender, swag for days. Look at this kid. You think he wants to play baseball? Pause this. Eric Nays said this to me, and it's the truth. He's Kevin Kiermaier on D, and since last August, he's Jackson Merrill on offense.
Wow.
Blend that together. That's a potential MVP candidate when it shakes out a couple years from now.
Boy, Jackson Merrill is, whew, that is something. Merrill last year, over the course of the whole season, 156 games, had an OPS of 826, 24 homers, 90 RBIs, stole 16 bases. That is impressive. Merrill so far this year has been very good until running across some injury issues, has Jackson Merrill. If PCA is that kind of combo platter, I mean, that's outrageous. The fact that his defense is as good as it is, raises the ceiling overall. I don't agree with DeRosa about moving PCA up to lead off, especially as we've seen him struggle seemingly with like get on base leadoff mindset versus go ahead and swing the bat mindset. And if he's going to be better off with the latter because he struggles with the former sometimes and gets frustrated with it, then I don't want to put that kind of pressure on him. I also happen to love the at-bats that Ian Happ is having of late. Just absolutely love them. You know, the production is finally there, but Happ just constantly giving you that at-bat. And also Ian Happ and Kyle Tucker, they have a thing for anybody who doesn't know. A little more on that later on. But anyway, here's more from DeRosa talking about PCA, and he references one of the home runs during the Dodgers series.
Dustin May spun him two sliders his first two ABs, so that was the pitch they were going for. The thing I love about PCA, even after that slider right there and as much as he threw it to him, he never came off Dustin May's best pitch. Ooh. And that ball is absolutely destroyed. And Dustin May knew it soon as he hit it. 95, two-seamer, down and away. He did not come off the gas and drives it. And I just love his moxie. This isn't at bat against Tanner Scott. He's going to fly out. But talk about wanting the moment. Look at this kid. He just got here. And he's on it. If he could clean up kind of his swing decisions and start shooting the ball the other way, he has it in him. He is going to be one of the better players in the entire sport.
One of the better players in the entire sport. This is the heady stuff that starts to happen. And you start to think about, you know, what are you looking at? And this is why you reach out and try to have contract extension conversations with that man, which obviously they did. But anyway, they've got several more years of control on Pete Crow Armstrong, and I hate having to think about that. So let's just enjoy this right now. Enjoy what's happening here. The thing he needs to work on, I think DeRosa mentioned it there. If not there, he mentioned it in another part, was like the swing decisions. And I mean, that's like the hardest thing. Folks, this is the hardest thing about baseball as an offensive player, is deciding, oh boy, is that going to be a strike? Is that even a fastball? I don't know. So I love when we try to minimize that and say, well, you know, he's just got to stop swinging at that stuff. I mean, it happens all the time. Steve Stone just did it about Luis Robert. Again, understandably, drives you crazy when you see these guys swing at sliders low and away again and again and again. It's hard to see. It's a very short amount of time that the pitch is in the air. You're watching it. You're having to make up your mind. I mean, really what it is, it's not making up your mind to decide to swing. It's making up your mind to decide not to swing. Talked about that with Nico Horner on the air a few weeks back at one point. Like, oh, you're deciding to shut it down. Watch a great hitter. Watch a great hitter. They're ready to swing on every single pitch, and then they decide to shut it down. It's not like they're up there going, let me wait for a pitch to hit, and then I'll swing. It's the most difficult thing in sports, using a cylindrical bat to hit a round ball flying through the air in less than half a second. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. They should be better at it. Idiot, why are you swinging at that? Because it's hard. Just know that it's very, very difficult. But anyway, but I don't want to like add to PCA's play to put him up there. Just let him sit back and do what he's doing. It's working out very well. So what happened? How did the power get unlocked in Pete Crow Armstrong's season and really in his overall career was the question. This is a portion of PCA on MLB Network talking with those guys about something that happened, I think, recently about his power.
The one thing, when I came and did the 30-15 at Sloan, I was having a conversation with Justin Turner and Dansby and all those guys, but I was fixated on your
short
toss.
He's in love with you.
And it was loud noises, bud. And now you're going oppo, and you're hitting some balls to places that I don't think people thought you were going to hit them to. Did you always have the pop and were kind of waiting on Lockett?
Maybe. If my buddies were just giving me some guff about this the other day, some high school friends, they were kind of reminding me that I didn't really have the juice in high school.
How does that happen?
But I guess to your question, maybe I did have it somewhere. I definitely didn't know how to utilize it. But JT is someone I should have mentioned in the last question. Just because that guy is about as routine oriented and focused as anybody.
That's Justin Turner he's talking about. Justin Turner's looked very bad offensively for the Cubs, but count the number of guys who are crediting him for being around and helping their mindset. Pete Crow Armstrong talking about him. Dansby's talked about him, and I know Dansby's struggling and scuffling too, but this thing is working. Don't mess with it. Don't mess with it. Don't mess with it by putting PCA up top. Just let it, Haps at bats, like a texture says here, Ian Haps at bats, he's setting the table right now. His at bats are comfortable. Yeah, they really are. It's just he thinks about it the way I want a leadoff guy to think about it. He walks a lot. He takes pitches. And there's a communication thing that can happen between Ian Happ and some of the other players. That's a beautiful thing. Anything else from PCA? Let's hear this clip, and maybe this is from before that, and that's the one he's referencing. This is Pete talking about learning from the veterans on this Cubs team in that same MLB Network interview. Here's PCA.
I've had a lot of really good veteran presence around me since 23, since when I really came up, and what I've loved kind of figuring out is that everybody's got their own thing, you know. Kyle Tucker does it a little bit differently than Ian Happ, but everybody is so true to what they know and what they've seen works for them. So, you know, Kyle's kind of the guy who you see do a little bit less. I'm at that stage right now where I kind of do a little bit more than Kyle Tucker, but I mean, it's simple. It's always simple with everybody, and you know, I've enjoyed seeing everybody in their working space because it's like that's their quiet time. That's where they have control over the baseball and kind of how it's moving. And that's the coolest part is seeing guys being able to separate work from play. And, you know, it's hard enough going out there for 162 or, you know, that's the goal at least every year, I guess. And, you know, being able to kind of make it easier on yourself, just set yourself up to play nine innings. You know, that was kind of the clearest thing when looking at guys like Kyle or Dansby or Ian is being able to maintain, you know, their health and then, you know, from there, just being able to go out and be themselves and hit a lot of homers.
Good stuff. PCA talking about learning from guys. Kyle does a little bit less. And Pete does a little bit more. And he's a young dude with piles of energy, and you never know how much you might need to do, want to do. It's interesting. It reminds me, Tim Kirkjian shared a story last week about how Dustin Pedroia used to show up at the ballpark 8 hours before game time, constantly. Like, he always showed up 8 hours before game time so he could get in the mindset and do all the work he needed to do. And that's what worked for Dustin Pedroia. I find that to be insane. But that's him. But Kirkjian's context for telling the story was Patriots Day in Boston, where they play morning baseball, as the White Sox did this past Monday. An 11:20 start time, or maybe 11:10 local start time in Boston. Legendary thing on the day of the marathon. And yes, Dustin Pedroia used to show up at Fenway Park at 3 in the morning for the 11 a.m. first pitch for Patriots Day. And that's ridiculous. So Pete Crow Armstrong, value starting to skyrocket. The ceiling is starting to be right where you kind of dreamed about it being. You're starting to see it. And another thing about Ian Happ that I want to make sure is known is his budding friendship with a very important guy. We'll discuss that before we get out of here at the top of the hour. That's next on Hit and Run on the Score.
Kyle Tucker hits it, driving to right field and deep. It's got a chance. Gone. The Cubs have taken the lead. Can you believe it? Listen to Wrigley.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Pat Hughes with the call. Kyle Tucker with the go-ahead homer last week in that crazy, crazy game against Arizona with all those runs. Kyle Tucker, big, big hits. He's been awfully good. 25 RBIs in his first 25 games as a Cub. First time that's happened since Andre Dawson in 1987. I noticed this happen, and it's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run for just a few more minutes. I noticed this happened, was it on that home run? Or was it a different home run? Maybe it was on that one. I don't know. You know that thing that Ian Happ does when he homers and he puts his hand on his helmet as he's crossing home plate and he dips the shoulder and it looks like it's like a little bit of a tip of the cap, but it's kind of a little dance move, a little do-si-do as well. A swing your partner around the knee. It's got a little bit of that square dance look to it. But I don't really know the reasoning behind Ian doing it. Maybe the midday show has to get to the bottom of that. But I've given them another task. What I've given them as a task is to delve into the relationship between Ian Happ and Kyle Tucker. Because that thing that Happ does when he homers, Tucker's been doing it. He's done it a couple times. In fact, he did it after one of those big homers to draw closer. And that was it. It was the one. It was one against the Dodgers.
I think it was the one to bring him before the Amaya game tying.
That's what it was. Right? One to make it 10-9 before the Amaya game tying home run. That's exactly it. That's the one where he did it. And I was home watching. I was like, wait, that's the Happ thing. And Happ scored ahead of him on that home run. I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting. There seems to be a connection between these two men because, folks, you see it on the broadcast sometimes, and I've certainly seen it out of the ballpark. They hang out together a lot. You can see them in the dugout a lot talking. And Tucker's a quiet guy. Happ is kind of a quiet guy, and maybe their bond is happening. I think it is. I think they're kind of tight. And so I thought about it that next day, and I called our friend Bruce Levine, our friend and colleague Bruce Levine. I said, Bruce, I'm not there at the ballpark today, but you are. Would you mind following up on this issue with Kyle Tucker? And Bruce went and talked to Kyle Tucker about that little home run move and about the bond between Happ and Tuck.
So our esteemed afternoon show at the Score, which is the flagship station of the Cubs, detected that Ian, when he hits a home run, he taps his hat, okay? Now Matt Spiegel from our show detected that you did the same thing. What is that? Will you share that at all, or you have to keep that in-house?
I was asking him about the other day, like, why he does it, and he was just saying he's just done that for a while now. I just thought it would be funny, especially, I mean, he's been on a good amount in front of me, and it seemed like whenever I'd hit a homer and I'd see him right there, I'd just do it too, just to have some fun and stuff. And I actually told him yesterday, I was like, I feel like I'm getting a little bit better at his little celebration. So it's just like a fun thing that I've been doing with him.
It's great.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
I wish I had been there yesterday. I should have gone yesterday and talked with Tucker about that because he is better at it now than Ian. He's totally better at it now. What is that about? What does he do better? That's what I need to follow up on. Is exactly that. Like, does he have more rhythm naturally than Ian? Does he just have a little more flow? Whatever it is, he's clearly better at it now. I mean, Ian's been doing it for years, and already Tucker's better at it. What does that tell you? That's tremendous. Look, it reminds me, because I saw this PCA quote earlier in the week about Hap, and he said, Ian always reminds us that Wrigley is the most fun place to be when the Cubs are playing good baseball. That quote from PCA about Ian Hap. So maybe Ian is sharing all that with Kyle as well. Like, hey, man, this is a great place. Because guess what? People need to recruit Kyle Tucker. People need to be actively recruiting him. Ball players on the team, ownership should be recruiting him with giant blank checks. And Jed Hoyer should be recruiting him, and I'm sure he is, and should be talking with his agent, and hopefully they will. But Kyle Tucker needs to fall in love with this place. And stuff like that, little fun things, bonds with teammates can absolutely increase that. So, yeah, I know, the money will help. For sure, the money will help. But, you know, we got to fall in love. And we have a job to do, people. We have a job to do all summer long. We, as talk show hosts, we need to put pressure on ownership to step up and give that man $500 million. Like, make sure you offer that to him. Try to keep him from going to the end of his free agency. And let this morning's revelation about Bryce Harper wanting to be here fuel that fire. And then you, the fans, give Kyle Tucker love. Give that man some love at the ballpark. And the players, if you're listening on a Sunday morning off because you're not playing until later, go ahead and do what you can as well. If not him, who? If not now, when? That's the guy. That's the guy, ownership. That's the guy to pay. Left-handed slug in the middle of your lineup or up top, like at two. It's a big, big deal. Thanks so much for listening to Hit and Run. We had fun today. Our only guest was Steve Stone. We don't need any more. That's right. We talked to you. Coming up later today, it is Osvaldo Beto of the A's going against Davis Martin of the White Sox. Tonight, it's Jameson Taillon against Aaron Nola of the Phillies. Cubs in Philly starts at 5:35. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer, first call at 6:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. A major score announcement coming up tomorrow morning at 9:45 during transition. Don't miss it. Tomorrow, 9:45 on the Score and the Odyssey app. Some good ball games later on. Toronto and New York, Kevin Gausman and Max Fried. Let's go. Enjoy the baseball. Tomorrow, lots of Bears draft coverage. Can you believe they waited till the 7th to get a running back? I know. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Have a wonderful Sunday, everybody. Thanks for listening to Hit and Run on the Score.